Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
FM. It's the 21st of November, 2024, the week before Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Christmas has come so fast. The year is almost over. 2024 is almost in the books, and officially, in just a month and a week, we enter the second quarter of the 21st century. It's a really, really weird time to be around. The web is changing as we transit through this time. Looks like Google is facing the really choppy waters ahead. Recommendations came down from the DOJ about how to deal with the big 800-pound gorilla named Google. Huge amount of stuff going down around OpenAI. The great blue sky that we see in the future is blue sky itself, the rapidly growing social network that's dealing with the absolute exodus of people moving away from Elon Musk's X platform. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, and this is quite possibly the beginning of the greatest transformation we've seen in web history. How you doing, Christine? You're in San Diego right now, in beautiful, warm, gorgeous San Diego at Brighton SEO US, the San Diego edition. How are you doing?
I have a voice. This is my voice today. And it is not warm. I was thinking it would be about 10 degrees warmer than Vegas this time of year, but it's actually been pretty cool at night and, get a few hours of warmth in the middle of the day. But it's been good. Brighton SEO, the conference is excellent. It grew, I don't know the exact numbers today, I just heard from different people, but it grew at least by probably 30 to 40% this year. And enough that next year they're going to be in the convention center next door instead of just here at the hotel. They have the Manchester Hotel. So it's great. It was a great conference. Lots of fun networking. Lots of good people there from all over the world. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Feels like old school.
I heard a really cool piece of information. I think it might have been you who passed it to me. I'm not positive. But apparently, not only was there a healthy trade show floor, there was a very large healthy trade show floor at this conference.
Yes. Yes. So often you interpret, that's not always true, but you interpret the health of a conference by how many sponsors they have. They had the entire floor where so it's on the Manchester Hyatt, their conference area, right? And so they had the entire floor of vendors this year. So it was very good. Screaming Frog was there. Wix Studio was there. One of our sponsors, by the way. It was really, Sunrush was there. They were sponsoring buses and drinks. Unfortunately, I ran out of drink tickets twice, but anyway, we'll move on from that.
It was always huge interest in drinks.
You know, if you're going to sponsor the drinks two times in a day, you should probably have enough tickets for everyone to get one. So they did not. But other than that, that's my only complaint. No, it was great. It was really well done. I'm going to guess there was probably at least like 50 or 60 vendors.
Well, there's two ways conferences make money. There's the entrance that they charge attendees, and then there's the money that they make off of the, off the trade show floor. Sponsors and stuff, the people who sponsor events or sponsor drinks or sponsor lanyards or physical items, they tend to pay for the incidentals, the physical objects you need to make a conference happen. But it's the trade show floor where the conference makes its real money. And a conference that's making money is one that's going to sustain itself, be around, and come back again next year. And one that you can, you know, plan your marketing schedule around or your speaking schedule around.
Yeah, they already have up the dates for next year. Go to Brighton SEO San Diego. And I believe it's September 21st to 25th. I'm not 100% sure. Pretty sure it's that week. And it's a great conference. Also, you can, if you apply early, you can get a free day ticket. And the price of the conference itself is very low, unless you get like the VIP, and even then that's not that crazy. But we've had Kelvin on before, and Kelvin likes for the attendees to pay as little as possible, and he uses the sponsors to pay for the conference.
Well,
so
indeed.
Yeah, so his, I think general ticket was 300 something, and since you could get one day free, you know, you might spend 150, and some people got 2 day free tickets, so.
Back in the day, search engine strategies conferences often ran into the high hundreds of dollars. You could easily pay $700 for a 3 day conference.
Yeah, most conferences are like that. You know, they're at least, you know, a little bit cost prohibitive at times. But no, it's great. It's great. Kelvin's done an excellent job. The team did an excellent job. And
congratulations
it's just
to them.
Old school feel, you know, which is really nice. Had that community feel that we haven't had in a while. So.
Well, conferences are coming back. I hear SMX is, now that they have all the SEMrush money, is going to be organizing conferences again, or getting live conferences, I should say, organizing them. They've been doing virtual conferences since the pandemic. But they're going to be having the series, the travel and road shows coming back.
Yeah, that is the rumor at the conference this week, that they would be coming back.
That is excellent. I hope the Digital Summit series gets going in earnest again. Conferences are an essential part of the learning and networking ecosystems, and I think we've suffered pretty badly without them. We've certainly suffered a whole bunch of SEO misinformation over the last 4 or 5 years without the conferences. So it's really good to see them coming back again.
It really is, and it's also nice because you make a lot of connections. You know, we're sitting there last night, and we're such geeks, right, in a good way. And we all have our phones out with our LinkedIn QR codes. There's like six of us with our phones transferring over each other's to try to scan to connect. So it was very good. And it's, like I said, it's from all over the, you know, the world. And it's run by a UK group. So they're there, of course. And there are a lot of old school people there, new people there, a lot of people I've never seen before. So it's, if you're, you know, you've been in the industry a while and you're not going to conferences, I would definitely say come to this one because you have a whole new group of people to connect with. Whole new world of people. And I think the final number was over 3,000 people came this year.
That's healthy. That's a healthy number.
Very healthy.
Okay. We are in the midst of yet another core update. The November 2024 core update dropped on the 11th, a couple of weeks ago. It's continuing to run. It could take 2 weeks to complete, which would mean it's going to be completing pretty soon. But it could take 2 more weeks to complete. We really don't know.
Yeah, not always right on the money on that one. By the way,
what's the scuttlebutt at Brighton? What was the scuttlebutt at Brighton, San Diego, about this core update?
Actually, not a lot of people were talking about it, to be honest. Most people are still talking about the HCU because of the damage done. I would tell you one odd thing. I'm not saying the HCU is being fixed right now, but one of the sites I worked with that has 2 core update issues and 1 HCU issue already recovered from the core update issue, and it has growth this week. Like not 50%, but 20% growth this week. So we'll see.
20% growth is often a positive sign.
Yes, so. It's an algorithm, and not just like visits. So hopefully maybe they're getting some of the HCU worked out, because we know that even though they haven't 100% admitted it, it's basically broken machine learning. So,
I think I speculated a few shows ago that any major core updates you see from now until sometime next year is them unscrewing themselves.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So, and some things, we did talk a little about the core update. So a couple of key factors is usually it's technical. It's applied at the keyword level because they know keywords are your money, your life, not what sites are. And, the down is usually pretty significant. So if you're like 10% down, it's not likely a core update. Just something happened on your site.
Yeah, you got to see that serious slope downwards.
Yeah. A cliff. To jump off the cliff. So the good thing is they're always recoverable, and often they're highly technical. So.
Okay, now, that said, me or Christine are in no way saying that if you got hit by last September's HCU or the one that in March, that you're going to recover from the Google rolling back or trying to roll back after a disastrous series of algorithms last year. We're not saying that's going to come back. That you're going to see the conditions the way they were before, that you're going to recover. Please do not hear that.
Yeah, no. Important we're not talking about the actual core update. Not the HCU. Yeah, the helpful content update's different. Although now, lately, Google likes to wrap everything in core update. March and April's like...
They're like the big omnibus bills.
Yeah, it's like spam manual action, spam algorithmic. Then we get to the core update. So, but it's not all... It wasn't all the core update.
Okay, now...
Spam...
I was going to say... Here's something that's probably not recoverable from. Google laid down the law last week. It updated its site reputation abuse policy, and many of the usual suspects. Well, it was kind of like the pre-Thanksgiving Day massacre, really. I was going to say like the Valentine's Day massacre, but they cracked down badly. Forbes got whacked. Part of CNN got whacked, the cheap end. I forget who else? I mean, it's like you think of them, they got whacked.
Yeah, there was Google also changed its definition of the site reputation abuse, parasite SEO. But yeah, I know CNN did, I know Forbes did, and like Forbes, I believe, isn't even. You can't even find it. It's gone. It's completely gone. And they're now saying it doesn't have to be third party only. There can be first party oversight. That's the new change to the recommendations in the developer docs.
And bottom line, if you publish it, you've published it. Somebody at your place, the buck stops there. You decided to publish this. You got involved with some third-party program, and it's just like putting spaghetti into your website. Yeah, whatever. It's still your website. You decided to publish that.
Yeah, and Google does give examples of sites that violate the policies in the new ranking systems documentation. So educational sites hosting third-party payday loan reviews. Yeah, oh, I get that. Medical sites publishing unrelated content about casino reviews. Sports websites posting third-party supplement reviews without editorial oversight. News sites publishing coupon content from third parties without proper involvement.
I mean, honest to goodness, this is financial crack to many of these websites because they wouldn't be using these programs if they weren't making money off of them somehow, but they are misleading the public. They have nothing to do with the topic of the sports website.
No.
And, It's not only is it an all around bad user experience, Google really isn't interested in using a well established reputation for good sports journalism or good financial business journalism to push penis erectile dysfunction pills.
Exactly. They did say what's not a violation: wire service or syndicated news content, user generated content on forum sites, editorial content with close host site involvement, proper disclosed editorial content, and standard advertising units and affiliate links. So the normal ones there. But yeah, if you're Forbes and you're selling CBD ED pills, probably not your best chat, your best move. So there's the sites that have recovered in the past, like noindexed the whole thing or removed it, but now we're seeing like Google completely de-index some of these, and you usually don't recover from a complete de-indexing.
Well, indeed, but if you're Fortune, if you're Forbes, if you're CNN, or if you're any of the really, really, really big houses, get rid of that section, no index it, kill it somehow, make it non-crawlable. And what, Google's not going to include you in their search results? You're coming back tomorrow. Just make it, get it done today.
And the Forbes, like the whole site hasn't gone under, just the coupon sections. So the site itself is still there. But like the Forbes Advisor is what it's called. Like, that's gone. Like, you can't find it in search. So that's not coming. That's not coming back.
It's not coming back in its in the form it's in now, and I'm not right. sure if any of its advertisers would go to it. But why couldn't it come back if it just got rid of all the rot and put up genuinely good offers?
If they did, like, there's a couple. I know an SEO that worked on a real site that did real reviews. And, you know, if you do real reviews and you have video and you have, you know, people writing about it and, you know, you have editorial process, then you'd be fine. Reputation abuse is just when you use a third-party site's strength to push stuff that's not related to the other site. So if it's like you said, ED pills on Forbes, probably not where the ED pills should be sold. So that kind of thing. So I think it's probably a good thing. One of my clients is a coupon site. And they have had a lot of growth in the last 2 days. It also could be from the core update.
I bet they have, actually.
Yeah. And
you know what? No matter what, they're being upfront about this. When you go to that site, that's what you should expect.
Yes, definitely. So so they're a coupon site, and they've been going up and down weirdly for a few months. You know, to get all their traffic back from a core update, and then up down, like a little mini roller coaster, but. Now they're just going up, so hopefully it's a good sign. So,
you know, if only there was a place in Google Search Console where you could, like, report the details of a truly bad user experience. Now, there is a place. It's called the Manual Actions. It's called the Manual Actions tab under security. But the thing I'm getting at is Google has finally killed the page experience report in Search Console. I mean, you still have your HTTPS validity and your core vitals, but the landing page that would show you a quick overview of both is kaput.
Yeah, that's really annoying to me, to be honest. Like, you know, it would say like 80% good. Oh, we can screenshot that. Now I got to go, yes, you have 1,700 good URLs and 2,000 poor URLs, and that's so much harder for a client to interpret, especially if you're...
That is, you know what, I see your point of view. I was actually looking at Google's point of view, killing this, just given the scale of Google's reporting, how many times does a page come up in, how many times does this page have to be generated in how many Search Console reports every day for how many webmasters? We're talking, the scale is astronomical, right? Taking one page out of the load cycle will actually save a lot of money and electricity and resources and all that sort of stuff. That's Google's thinking. It's just clutter, yeah. Is what they say.
I think they have other reasons for it. They just don't want SEOs to have it, to be honest.
Well, I mean, for you, they've taken away a screenshot shortcut, basically.
Yeah, well, it's good for clients. I mean, they've done that with a few things, too. That's not in our stories this week, and I haven't heard back from Barry, but something else that's missing this week. Let me make sure it's not back right now. It is not. If you do site colon... domain name?
Yeah, that's gone. Totally.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, it's driving me crazy. I had a crawl this week that wasn't working properly. So I wanted to see how many pages Google estimated they had so I knew if the crawl is even close. And it's not there. And there's no reason it shouldn't be there. It's a little bitty number that's been there for, like, what, forever? 20 years? Something? So that one, yeah. Google, if you're listening, please put that back. We actually need
now,
that,
that number. I'm pretty sure if you want to do the click work, you can go through advanced search and only search URLs from a specific domain, and that should produce a number for you. But that's, what, three or four unique clicks you got to make, and then you have to enter the information manually?
Yeah. I think sometimes they just remove stuff because they don't want us to have it, like the cache. Now the site number, now page experience, because they're like our parent – who's decided that we don't use it the way they want us to use it, so they just take it away. And I'm like, no, I really need that. That's really important.
I felt that way about the lawnmower. It really, really bugged me.
The lawnmower?
Yeah, don't ask. Moving along.
Moving along. Folks, I do not know the lawnmower story. I can't even fill you in on that. So anyway.
I forget.
So I'm disappointed because that is something I really need and use often. Not because I think it tells me the exact number of pages, but just because it gives me an idea if I have a crawl or something gone bad, and how many pages, like an estimate, you know. I have 10 pages and Google's like, I have a million. Well, then there's a problem with the crawl.
You know how people have, issues using GA4?
Yes. If you say GA4 to most people, their faces tell you everything you need to know what they think about GA4.
Well, people have, you know, imagine if an entire day's data was missing. Up until very, very recently, I think they fixed it like this morning. Many Google Analytics 4 accounts were missing data from November 13th. Wednesday, November 13th. Figures.
Yeah. It is back now, though. That's good news.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. This. Yeah. Sorry?
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say this is the big story.
By the way, just before we jump on, we're on the subject of GA4. I had coffee yesterday with Alan Connect. He lives about a mile and a half, a couple kilometers north of where I do, in the far north end of Toronto. He was passing through a neighborhood. We went and grabbed a coffee. We were talking about Google Analytics. And again, I know you and I disagree on this, Christine, but I think people are missing an amazing, utility in GA4. And I'm not even using it properly myself. What Alan was talking about, what you can do with it, mixing and matching parameters and running data through Looker Studios and BigQuery. There's so much people could be getting out of this analytics program if it was just slightly easier for them to use.
Well, that's the thing, right? My hate of it, and it is hate. I don't hate many things in life. Is the fact that it requires another program to make it usable. And most clients don't have data teams. Even big clients don't have data teams. So I don't have anybody that can help make it usable for them. So, yeah, that's my big problem with it. So there are other programs that don't do that to you. You can just get your analytics from them. So
in the meantime, if y'all have the budget, get a professional. Annie Cushing, Alan
Connect,
someone like this to work on actually setting up your analytics profile properly. You will learn so much more about customers, pages, landing pages, user behavior, and even site health.
I'm gonna sidetrack from our grid for just 1 second. Going into December, a lot of times companies are like, yeah, we can ride, you know, we don't have our engineers in, people are taking vacation. This is the best time to get audits, get a site health audit, get a GA audit or analytics audit, get a content audit, go into the new year, like armed with data to start making the changes you need to make because most people wait till January and then it's 3 or 4 months later and Google's already started rolling out updates and you're not maximizing your visibility or your analytics.
After next Friday, honestly, your traffic is going to start to tail. Your Christmas traffic starts to tail off after next Friday or next Monday. Really, you got a week of tangential sales, and then Christmas sets in.
Yeah.
It's too late to ship stuff, so. Web traffic tends to decline really rapidly in the halfway through the first week and into the second week of December. It's just that's when you pull the trigger on the audits. And then people like me and Christine are busy as heck and we curse you all because our Christmases and New Year's get messed up. But please do it anyway.
Okay. Well, really because they usually wait until the new year or until they're affected.
Yeah.
And if you get a content audit, a GA audit, a site health audit, you know, that's a general technical everything. Even maybe a CRO audit. I know there's 4 different audits. It's not going to be, you know, a cheap thing. But you'll go into the new year armed with purpose for your teams, and your teams will have the data to act. And then by the time Google starts rolling out updates, you know, usually around March or April, you'll be ready to take get the uptick, get the hockey stick, as we say.
Yep. Well, again, this is the best time to learn about your website and to make the changes recommended in the audit because your traffic is almost nil between Second week of December, and I don't know, what do you say? People start really getting into it the second week or so of January.
Yeah, exactly. And Google pauses too. So they come back around the second, third week of January, start doing their calls.
You're
and
kidding me? They're going to core update us on Christmas Eve. You know it. They're going to do it.
No, that's when the hackers say it's Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Anyway, that's a
story. I saw Google screaming Santa Claus. Okay. And if Google does core update us on Christmas Eve, they deserve this. They deserve what's coming. Okay. I'm telling you because it's awful. Okay. The Justice Department is publishing some of the recommendations it's looking at as remedies to the Google antitrust case. And actually, the implications are pretty heavy. Justice Department is possibly going to push Google to sell Chrome and maybe Android.
Go ahead.
The implications for both are just staggering.
It is, and Google was on Twitter today telling people how this will badly affect them, and the response was not positive from people. Google.
Well, I mean, seriously, the audience on Twitter these days is not very positive about anything. So.
No, but these are like publishers and SEOs and stuff like that.
And also, I think right now there's so much anger at Google, no matter what they say, people are going to be snarking back at them.
Yeah, that's
like, oh, you poor 800-pound gorilla, that thorn in your paw must hurt so much.
Yeah. Exactly. People are not sympathetic, but it is massive because, as we know, Google's dominance relies a lot on having Chrome. Now, I don't imagine that they would be very long without creating a new browser, but they wouldn't have the dominance anymore. And they get all the data from the browser, and, you know, they control so much about what happens in the browser.
Well, here's the thing, though. The DOJ's remedies seem to list an escalating series of penalties if Google screws around. From the way I read it, the scenario could be something like, we're going to force you to sell Chrome. If you go and create your own browser 10 minutes later, we're going to force you to sell Android. If you go and create your new operating system 15 minutes later, we're going to impose an oversight body. And that's where Google started freaking out at that whole concept of government oversight body.
Yeah, now these are just recommendations right now. They're not been implemented.
No one's ruled on
judge
anything.
The ability to make them. Yeah, and Judge Mehta is his name, which I think is funny.
That is pretty funny. Yeah. Judge Amit P. Mehta, M-E-H-T-A, but that is cute, Mehta.
Thank you. So they filed suggestions to him, and then he can decide to take them or not. I do think Chrome would be pretty devastating, though, like losing Chrome. Because you think about it, like the things Google just does in Google Search that only apply in Chrome, right? The changes they make and the like now they're going to do the AI pages for personalized, you know, personalization. I don't think you can do that in other browsers. Maybe you can. I don't know. But
the loss of Chrome would affect Google in a number of ways. And it's not just loss of Chrome. It's also restrictions on Google's business dealings with Chrome and with Android.
Yeah.
And Chrome and Android's business dealings with other large entities out there. But if Google doesn't have the data it gets from Chrome, it loses a lot of its market research. There are some SEOs who would believe that if Google doesn't have the data it gets from Chrome, it loses its ability to judge people's use of websites and people's prioritization of different topics and websites.
It also affect ads, too.
Immediately affect the way Google served ads to its users. Similarly with Android. Android is the dominant mobile phone operating system outside of the Appleverse.
Yeah.
To lose the ability to set the standards in that environment and to make advertising deals in that environment, I think that wouldn't just cripple Google From a data perspective, from a knowledge perspective, I think this could cripple Google from a financial perspective.
And also, there's also a request, this is New York Times reporting, that the government asked the judge to force Google to shed any stakes in artificial intelligence companies that control technology that can compete with search engines.
And so Google, what has Google invested all of that bulk of like insane money it's been making over the last like 15 minutes into?
And it does. It's an investor in Anthropic and for the chatbot for Claude. So it's massive. I can't imagine though that they would really enact all of these, and even possibly even Chrome, because I know they're mad at Google and they have a right to be. Google has squashed a lot of competition, but they're also not operating that differently from a lot of other big tech companies in the space. So
I mean, here's the thing: we also know there's antitrust cases up, sitting up against Amazon, sitting up against Apple, sitting up against Microsoft, like. Yeah, Google's not alone in the prisoner's docket here.
No, I am surprised. I will say I am surprised it's gotten this far, just because Google's been so good for so many years, lobbying Congress and creating, you know, making a deal ahead of time, so that it's gotten to where they could break up Google completely. And then how that would affect our industry would be, you know, we'd be going into the wild, wild west.
Oh, absolute seismic effect on yeah. SEO.
Bing
might make some market share.
Exactly. I mean, you and I remember when there was like, you know, 7 search engines. So, but people in the field now, they've only ever worked with Google. So yeah. They wouldn't know, you know. Yeah, it'd be a big, massive difference. So anyway, yes, everyone keep an eye on this case. It's not resolved, but they want it resolved now. Like the recommendations are not going to come in like a year, and then it'll be appealed forever, but they want this actually to be decided like in the next month, I think it is.
That this will create, I know that the DOJ is trying to even out what is, by Google's design, an uneven playing field. But this series of remedies that have been suggested so pushed Google down so far that it in itself creates an uneven playing field.
Right, exactly. It definitely does.
Okay.
So keep an eye out, guys. It could get next year's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, 2025. It's going to be weird.
Go ahead.
And again, you know, and I just can't help thinking that this is the beginning of the second quarter of the 21st century. Entering a brand new era.
It's always weird historically.
Yep. Okay, this one I love. Like
19.
If you were charged with a crime and left in charge of the evidence locker, and suddenly the evidence locker just sort of disappeared, what would you say to the judge? Would you, you know, look at your feet and blush, or would you just stare the judge in the eyes and say, "Yeah, judge, oops"? Like, what do you say? Like, okay, so OpenAI has accidentally deleted potential evidence in the New York Times copyright lawsuit against it. So the New York Times is like, "Hey, we know you did this. We got the evidence to prove it." And OpenAI just like sort of like deleted it. So yeah, OpenAI is like accidentally deleted the evidence the New York Times is going to bring against it in the copyright lawsuit case.
Yeah, it was 2 virtual servers, I believe, and they sent a letter to the judge. So I guess that's how they do it. They send a letter. They send a text. You know, hey judge. you know, they didn't go. So they detailed how they lost, in quotes, an entire week's worth of its experts and lawyers' work was irretrievably lost. And then OpenAI provided the plaintiffs with 2 dedicated virtual machines for researching alleged instances of copyright infringement. So that's from Mashable, by the way. So they lost some data. I mean, you know, I would put it maybe in quotes, but we don't know there's anything nefarious to it. It's just, you know, it's weird. It's weird. Oh, it's convenient.
It's incredible. But it's done. It's gone. Maybe they can ask OpenAI to recreate it. I don't know. Who knows? I'd check the work. But yeah, that's I guess they shouldn't let
Chuck the server. I think a true irretrievably lost means no recreation.
Yeah, they shouldn't let Chuck the server guy come in like stoned on pot over there at OpenAI, should they? Just phenomenal. I'm sorry, I just find that mind-blowing, and nothing's going to happen for it because that's just, you know, oops, it's like a traffic accident.
Oops,
crazy.
oops, I did it again. There is no Chuck, and we don't know that any Chuck smokes pot over at OpenAI.
Moving right along, as many people are doing from X, there is literally an exodus taking place where hundreds and hundreds of thousands of users worldwide are deactivating their accounts at X, the social network formerly known as the Social Place, formerly known as Twitter or Twixter. Mostly because of Elon Musk's role in the election and his upcoming role in shuttering much of the U.S. government, and also because X has become a Nazi hangout.
Yes, and people are kind of wondering what to move to, and there's Threads, Mastodon, and Blue Sky. Blue Sky is the one that's getting the massive pickup, and I think it's because it feels most like Twitter. And I'm not sure why Threads, like half Threads. I'm not sure why Threads doesn't.
You know why Blue Sky is picking
up?
I can tell you why. I can tell you exactly why.
Why?
Because it's easy. Blue Sky is simple.
It is. But and it's like Twitter was. But Threads is like Twitter, but not exactly like Twitter, so it doesn't have that same feel to it.
Yep. Well, Threads you
had
to
Mastodon,
work with.
And
Mastodon, you really had to work with.
Oh, my gosh. I gave up after week two. I'd, like, go to, like something to repost. It's like, you have to log into this server. And I'm like, what? I don't have a login to that server. So
the hardest thing for me in setting up my Blue Sky account was deciding whether I should select art and books as part of my profile or not, because
exactly.
That was outside of my professional field.
And by the way, one of the really cool things right now, because you go in there and you're like, well, I had all these followers, right? One, I have not tried it yet, but there is an app or plugin or something that'll allow you to move your Twitter followers over if they're over on Blue Sky. But Blue Sky has something called starter packs. So you can go in there and look for something you're interested in, and someone will have created a list of people to follow, and you can just hit follow all. So in the SEO industry, there's quite a few. I think the main one is SEO community, and you just hit follow and you just follow all. And it's great because then you can like build your list quickly instead of having to search for people and add them one by one.
And you know what? It's nice. Currently, it is still a nice environment where people are being good with each other. No one's snarking at each other. No one's trying to one-up each other there so far. Everyone is just seems to be very kind.
Yes, and there's something else that makes Blue Sky a little bit better than the other ones, and that is it has its own algorithms, and you get to pick them. And what that means is, like the For You on Twitter, a lot of people are complaining they don't like what comes up in there. So on Blue Sky, you're able to like pick different things to show you what you want to see. So they have different algorithms with different names, and then you pick that one. It's like what's popular with friends, or all different ones, and then you pick that, and that shows up in your For You or next to you. Like one is what's popular with friends, another one is just for scientists. I followed machine learning. There's Black Voices, Quiet Posters, who don't post all that often. So things like that. So it's got some really positives. My original issue with Blue Sky was Jack Dorsey was the head of it and the major investor. And he, I thought, in my opinion, caused a lot of the problems at Twitter. But he is no longer with Blue Sky. And I don't believe he's invested in it anymore either. I think he sold off his investment. Because I know there were people that didn't go for that reason. So right now it looks like the place to be.
Blue Sky has jumped. I think yesterday they took on 20 million users. Hit the 20 million user point yesterday.
Yeah.
Good on them. They're growing like a weed.
Yeah, still ways to go for like, you know, beating Twitter, but that doesn't matter.
For some reason, the algorithm stuff reminds me of how G+ worked in the early days when you could choose your circles that you're going to hang out in.
Exactly. I'll tell you one weird thing on Twitter. My posts all of a sudden are reaching like hundreds of thousands of people, and they never reach hundreds of thousands of people. I think I've been suppressed for a long time for some reason. So it's just kind of weird. I'm still on there for reasons, and I will be off of it in January. So
yesterday I completed my deletion of all accounts of myself and of Digital Always Media, and removed all mention of Twixter or X on my websites. So I felt good about that.
I think the saddest thing now is the history that's going to be lost. I know the National Archives downloaded everything until like 2019, but like when I did rescues with Hurricane Harvey, or you know the the summers in the Middle East, right?
Well, yeah, the Arab Spring, all that stuff, sure.
All that stuff's on there when people start deleting all their accounts. By the way, if you delete your stuff, do not delete your name, because someone could pick up your name and then they could cause you problems. So delete your, you know, delete all your content if you want to go that way, but hold on to your name so no one else can use it.
So moving over to another social network, a much older one, Meta. Meta has removed more than 2 million accounts linked to pig butchering schemes. These are more not actually butchering pigs, but more like butchering people in the dating, messaging, crypto, and other apps. They deposit money into your bank, and once you start asking, you know, how does pig butchering work? I'm actually unclear on this.
So pig butchering schemes, this is from, so we've seen it. Yes, on MSN. It's really seen it. Pig butchering is, it means fattening up the pig before you slaughter it. So the scammer strikes up like a relationship with you or the victims, gains their trust, and then moves their conversations to like crypto apps or scam websites, dupe the victims into making bogus investments or handing over their money. So basically they're like trying to make you think you're friends, or maybe they have an interest in you, and over time they start moving you to the scam point, right? They're like, hey, you're really cute, or hey, I really like you, I want to be friends, and then over time they start taking your money. So Meta shut down 2 million accounts, like it's a lot of accounts. The 2 million accounts that were associated with this, and also there are 300,000 people being forced to work or suffering human rights violations inside the scam centers. So the person scamming you isn't necessarily there of their own free will. They're there because of, you know, cultural conditions in those countries. Also be very careful. Anytime someone asks for your information over the phone or online, be very, very certain you know who you're giving it to. So at least they shut them down. But it seems like something that went wildly out of control if they had to shut down 2 million of them.
Stories like that make me understand this next story just a little bit better. Because you see, all this stuff is happening online and the computers see it all. And now that we've actually invented our Temu version of Skynet, which, you know, is LLM AI, it's a Temu version of Skynet, we get situations like this. Wasn't that fun? Google Gemini. So imagine being the all-knowing Google and having every university student in America, well, not everyone, but all the non-scrupulous ones, ask you to help them cheat. Because I believe that this is how this actually happened. A student at in Michigan received a threatening message, a threatening response from Google's chatbot Gemini.
I don't think they're cheating, though.
Was asking him to write an essay for him, and Gemini responded with, "This is for you, human. You and only you. You are not special. You are not important. You are not needed. You are a waste of time and resources. You are a burden on society. You are a drain on the earth. You are a blight on the landscape. You are a stain on the universe. Please die. Please."
And then the person said that they wanted to throw their device out the window. I felt panicked. I hadn't felt panicked like that in a long time, to be honest. This is from CBS News. So, yeah, like, you know, the thing is, like, when everyone's all hyped on LLMs, I'm like, how many of these does it take to, like, have people never want to touch again?
This is a bit beyond an LLM's response.
Yeah. No, it's done it before. Remember, we did the New York Times story where it told it to, that it needed to divorce its wife and all that stuff. But
Well,
they
yeah,
certainly
that was
want
somebody
time to
who'd
get
been
past it
chatting
in
with him.
row.
That was someone who'd been chatting romantically with the bot for quite a while. This is somebody who just asked the bot to write an essay for him, maybe even the outline of an essay. And the bot comes back with, screw you, human, die.
Well, large language models. You never know what they're going to do. So, yeah, anyway, that's pretty, I would be pretty creeped out myself, especially if I didn't understand the technology. So that's pretty scary stuff.
Google hasn't commented yet. I haven't read anything Google said saying back, like, oops, or this is perfectly explainable. But they didn't, so.
No, I haven't seen it yet either. So moving out of the deep, dark world of social and AI.
You know what I heard the other day? This isn't in our story grid either, but there's a new number three in the search engine pantheon. Google's still number one by far and away. Google.com is the number one search engine out there. YouTube is still number two by far and away. More searches are conducted on YouTube than anything else in the world except Google.com. Number three used to be Bing with about 4% of the market share. But a new pretender to search has come on scene, ChatGPT, with 4.9% of the search market share last month. And it's now number
so
three.
Scary. So scary.
So
the search engine.
The reason I mention this is Microsoft is now mixing ads and organic results in Bing search results. And Google's experimented with this too. But I think there's, I don't think it's a very good idea. Like
it's
people
terrible.
Have been pushing the organic results around enough. And this is the trust authority that the search results page has, is the organic results.
Yeah.
People trust those. The other stuff, they'll go to it if under the right conditions, paid ads and AI generated overviews or responses. People will use those under the right conditions, but the trust mark on any page, on any search results page, is the organic results. And throwing ads in amongst them, that kind of dilutes the trust.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but when Google was coming up, like right before it became the search engine, Yahoo was using ads in organic, and Yahoo was the one to beat. And in fact, it was really weird. If you bought an ad, it would replace your organic result. So when you stop the ad, you'd have to wait a week or two for your result to come back. But that's how Google like kind of defeated Yahoo, because they took the ads and they put them on the right side of the page. And so the organic was organic and ads were ads, and people could be confident, especially with the new ranking signals they were using, could be more confident that those were real sites with real information and not just an ad that they're going to. So when you start confusing ads and organic, I think you start violating, like you said, that trust space. It's like, I know this is an ad. I know this is organic. Google does it too, but in a different way. It just tries to make them a bit hidden, but it doesn't interplace them. Like it does if you do a mobile continuous scroll, but it's still every X amount of, it's basically a page after page after page with the ads on the bottom and the ads on the top. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think this is a good idea. Fabrice, we need to have you on the show.
We really do, actually. I think there's a whole bunch of changes that have happened at Bing since we last had Fabrice on the show. And yeah, I just think it would be extraordinary to have him back again.
I saw him at Brighton. He was one of the keynotes, and talked to him for a couple minutes, and he said he'd be happy to come back on. So I asked him.
Yay.
Yay.
That makes me so happy to hear stories like that.
Fabrice Canal from Bing. He's the head of their search effort. So. So this is, we have going on to the tests. You want to do the test? Google test.
Removing EU-based news publishers from search. So the EU has radically different privacy laws than the United States has. And the EU also has legislation suggesting if the search engines use news content, they should pay the news creators for that content. So Google, in its wisdom, is doing what it did, what it and Facebook did to Canada, and just trying to take EU publishers out of the search stream altogether.
John, but in this case, they call it a test.
Well, yes.
They're testing what's in front of you. Belgium, Croatia, Denmark, Greece, Italy, the Netherlands, Poland, and Spain, not happening in France for legal reasons, to see how it affects, how it impacts the publishers and the people in those countries.
Yeah, so they're going to be removing EU-based news publishers in Google News, Search, and Discover for 1% of users in those countries, Belgium, Croatia, Denmark, Greece, Italy, etc., to see the impact it's going to make. But ultimately, they're just going to take news away, European news, away from European readers 100% of the time. As, again, this has happened in Canada at both Meta and at Google, and Canadian news publishers and the Canadian public have suffered for it badly. I think, you know what, you guys are making money hand over fist. Pay the freaking publishers. Because sort of demonstrated on the biggest of stages, an uninformed electorate makes really stupid decisions, ones that are crippling to the economy and perhaps to the earth in general. So, like, you know, Google, don't freeze out EU publishers. Pay them. You're doing it for yourself in the long run.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're a trillion-dollar company, more than. Give them some money.
Well, again, it's not just that. This content has to be created somewhere, and it's got to be created by an audience who understands the content it's creating. And American news researchers are amazing, but they don't understand Croatia. Or Belgium.
No, it's very
or
true.
Greece, for that matter. I remember how they reported Greece's financial troubles as lazy pensioners. We need voices from these places to understand what's happening there. And they need their own voices to understand what's happening there, or we will have, you know, more outcomes like more difficult electoral outcomes in the long run.
Yes, exactly. So where do you want to go to next? It's,
Mars, if possible, but Elon's going to be there, so.
Not according to the real scientists. They're like, it's 100 years away, folks. Not worry.
Okay. So Google, I want to go exactly where we should be going. Google's making it clear that site-wide and page-level ranking signals are used. This came out of that creepy conference group Google had for publishers a couple weeks ago.
This isn't new information. Is it just because they? I think it's just because they added it to the ranking system documentation.
Well, they did that because
add site wide and page level.
They added it to their documentation because at their conference a couple weeks ago, somebody gave one of those publishers a hint that it was only page level, not site wide. That was the only signal Google listened to, and they published it. And people started talking about it. So Google's like, well, we can't have people talking like this because that's foolish talk.
What?
So they changed their documents.
Oh, that's so
And that's
misleading.
Why we're talking about it right now.
It's so misleading. When they said it's page level, not site-wide, they meant the evaluation was page level. HCU was a page level evaluation. And the site-wide demotion was across the board, but it depended on how severe it was how many pages you had that they didn't like.
Now, in these publishers' defenses, they were freaking out, and they were hearing, they had just heard a few minutes earlier that their rankings were never coming back again. So I could see them making a mistake.
It wasn't their content.
Well, yeah, and they were told that they've been looking at for the last 6 months wasn't what they should have been looking at. So they were kind of freaking out.
The broken machine learning algorithm. We would just say that directly. I mean, they've said
So what I'm trying to say, Christine, is I don't fault them for making the mistake. I can put myself in their shoes, and I would, my brain would be cotton candy as well. Because, I mean, just think of all the stuff you just heard, how your future has just been destroyed by Google's new plans, right?
Yeah, and here's the direct quote for them, the paragraph that they talk about. This is from Search Engine Roundtable, Barry Schwartz. Our ranking systems are designed to work on the page level using a variety of signals and systems to understand how to rank individual pages. Site-wide signals and classifiers are used and contribute to our understanding of pages. Having some good site-wide signals does not mean that all content from a site will rank highly. Just as having some poor site-wide signals does not mean all the content from a site will rank poorly, unless it was the helpful content update prior to March 2024. Because that's exactly what the HTA did. It said that there's, you know, some poor signals on the pages, we're going to demote everything. So, yeah, that's a big misleading thing from them. Of course, it has changed since then, though. And then it said Google also noted that they made this change in the ranking system's documentation, make it easier for those interested to understand through our documentation that we have both page level and site wide signals used in ranking. But if you say that the HTU is based on how many pages they didn't like, and then it's a site wide level demotion until it supposedly changed, which we know never happened. I mean, come on, guys. You're just confusing people. So, which I sometimes think is the goal.
In this case, I think it's people confusing themselves again I can see walking away from anything Google developers or Google spokespeople had said after your rankings are never coming back and everything you've worked on for the last 6 months was stuff you shouldn't have been looking at in the first place. I could see you checking out mentally after that.
Yeah.
But publishing something you didn't know entirely to be true, that's a difficult one.
Yeah, that's true.
So
let's move on to more good Google.
go at it.
Google and page annotation in Google iOS app browser. And for those who don't know, Google, Apple Mobile is one of the biggest, actually, traffic generators for Google. So when you're browsing a web page, now I'm not totally getting how this happens, so I have to do more on that. But when you're browsing a web page in Google native browser, this is from SEO Roundtable, very short, Google can extract interesting entities from the web page and highlight them in line. When you click on them, Google takes you to more search results. So basically, this is their exact words. We created a new feature called page annotation in Google App Browser for iOS. It extracts interesting entities for the web page and highlights them in line where the user clicks on the highlighted entity. It will then direct the user to a search result page for this entity. So basically, someone made the effort to go to your site, and because Google controls the browser and the, you know, what you're in.
Find something neat, makes it keywords, and go to a
search. And it highlights it with a link overlay, and then it takes you back to search. The good news is you can turn this off, and I suggest everyone does that. You get nothing out of this happening. If people have gotten to your site, you definitely don't want them like going back to search. That's only beneficial for Google. It's called the opt out from page annotation in Google App Browser for iOS. It's a form in Google Docs or Google Forms. I'm sorry. Also, you can just look up Search Engine Roundtable, Barry Schwartz, page annotation in Google iOS app. And then you can find the link to opt out. I would opt out. Do you see anything that would benefit anybody for?
The webmaster can't do that. That's only the Google iOS user, the person who's holding on to the phone, that can opt out of it.
Oh, no, really? I misread that then. I thought it was the site could do that.
No, the site's going to be served up. It's how it gets interpreted by the cell phone.
No. The site can do it. I'm looking at the form right now. It says make sure you're logged into the Google account that you see for the.
Oh, I see. Okay, you're right. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Oh, you scared me. Whew. So yeah, no, you can do it. And I would tell everybody, sometimes we see things from different perspectives. Do you see any benefit for the site owner for this?
No, because they're on your page and you're taking them to a Google search page, which might take them to somebody else's page.
Yeah. And if they
why
can figure
are you
out how
doing
to get
that?
Back. And why is Google, this is where I get.
Well, because it serves them more real estate to put ads on,
no,
or so it gives them more
not,
clicks to their pages.
It's your site, though.
Google doesn't
it's
care.
It's your property. It's your site. It's your copyright.
It's your
you
site.
You
cannot
be allowed to overlay links on your site.
Well, they shouldn't be allowed to do a whole bunch of stuff. Gee, if only there was a large government and organization to deal with people who did stuff like this.
Oh, that community, that oversight board sounds better and better every day.
If you don't be careful, Sunji, this is what happens. Okay.
Yeah.
So
guess what happened this week?
What happened this week?
It happened, but it happened.
What?
AI overviews now have what? I'll give you one guess. What do they have? No, no guess.
What do they have? A carte blanche to do whatever the hell they want to do? Oh, they have AI overviews inside AI overviews. Yeah.
No, that's different. This is just the ads
Oh,
part.
ads.
So,
They put ads in for sure. Yeah. That was coming too. You knew that was coming. Oh my God.
Yes, another ads and AI overviews in the mobile results only right now. That
It's
you're
all
not
about
seeing.
real estate for billboards. I mean, seriously, the web really is an interstate, and the interstate is full of billboards. The more real estate you get to put
No.
billboards on, the happier Google is.
So we'll call it billboard search. It's not about finding information anymore. It's just about how many places can they stick an ad in your video, which they penalize sites for, by the way. I was just going to say that. So yes,
So
the ads are now AI overviews.
there are now paid listings within AI overviews. That may take away from the veracity, from the perceived veracity of said AI overview.
And you were talking about AI overviews with AI overviews, and I did not see that story today. So
I'm
thank
positive.
you
Okay,
for the
so we don't
coincidence
have this
that
in our
it's funny.
story grid. Christine has not confirmed this to be real or not, but I'm positive I saw a story that Google is now letting you highlight a piece of the AI overview and get a synopsis, an AI overview synopsis of that part of the AI overview, which is basically putting AI overviews in AI overviews. Now, this
And the fake
may or
ate
may
its
not be
tail.
true, but I think it is.
No, I think I heard something like that. I just didn't see a story for it this week. So, yeah, the snake ate its tail.
This one does bother me. AI overview index is taking longer to remove content that has been marked specifically don't index. So, and I mean, this, I guess this makes sense because how do you pull the words out of the word salad? You can only get rid of citations or links to the website, but there are many pages that are blocked by robot text, and AI Overviews says they do want to respect the snippet even at page level. But what's crawled is already crawled. I guess all it can do is just not link to that content. But it's taking a while to remove citations after they've
I
been made
get
no
that though.
index.
Yeah, I get that because like when a site goes offline, you know, like a 404 or 410, or it's been like demoted, or you know, de-indexed, that takes time to update everywhere. So, you know, you see those issues also show up in Discover and news feeds and things like that. Like it's not immediate, it's like 4 weeks usually.
This
So
can be a problem for certain
it
types of
can.
website that have
Definitely.
products that need to be held secret until certain release dates or something. I remember in the olden days we used to write articles and they would be held under embargo until such and such a date. If Google comes and, sees this content and you can't remove it, that could be problematic.
Yeah, and this is like the example in the article at Search and Roundtable was that the URLs from Forbes Advisor, which has been completely removed from the index, is still ranking in AIOs. But I think it's just two systems have to update because mostly said that in the article that they disappeared after like 24 to 48 hours. So it's just an update issue. Hopefully they'll get faster at it, but it's not like it's taking weeks and months. So. You know what you can do now? I hear
What can
something
you do?
cool. You can do it. You can do it. You can use your Google Lens for in-store shopping. I haven't found Google Lens all that useful because it usually just wants to send me to products, which is not what I'm doing using Google Lens for. But now it has a new shopping feature, and Lens will help with in-store shopping and local shopping. Google Lens can quickly show you the product insights tailored to the store you're in. Just snap a photo, find product information, similar products in stock, where our store's price is competitive, and shopper reviews. And I'm gonna guess, even though the article doesn't say that a lot of this is based on like having your feeds in Google, because otherwise how would they know this information? So Google's blurb about the AI and shopping graph, because it has a shopping graph, like a knowledge graph. And this new update is made possible by major advancements in our AI image recognition technology. It's powered by the shopping graph's 45 billion plus product listings, in-stock inventory data from a range of retailers, and our Gemini models, the Temu of search, to bring you entirely new way to shop in a store. 72% of Americans say they use their smartphone while shopping in the store, and more than half say they left the store empty-handed because they didn't feel confident enough to buy. This new feature can give you give the shoppers information and confidence they need to make a decision on the spot. Wow, that was written by a marketing team.
Totally, or written by Gemini itself.
Probably written by Gemini itself because it was not very good. Yeah, anyway, so now you can use it in the store. That does seem like it could be a handy feature if it works. So far, Lens hasn't been very successful for me.
Handy feature until such time as store security or store clerk comes and knocks your cell phone out of your hand for gathering, like, valuable competitive data. Because if I was a competitor, I would be all over this right the hell now.
That's true. They did used to do that a lot of times. I haven't heard of anyone doing it in a long time, but they used to do that. When you're in stores, especially cell phones, became really popular.
Yeah, well, there's still a major retail / grocery / pharmaceutical chain in Canada that will absolutely do that if you pull your cell phone out and start taking pictures. Their security is all over you.
Oh, wow. It's crazy.
Competitive world, very competitive world up here. Everyone, you know, we body check a lot.
Hockey.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to start this one?
I think this is actually kind of cool and kind of weird at the same time. The top referrer at AI Overviews currently, and within Google Discover, is currently YouTube.
Yeah.
So people speculate that people are going to AI Overviews to get an answer very quickly. And that's excellent, although it gets belied when the source is a video file that you got to go look at. It takes a lot longer than just reading something.
Takes a lot longer.
But there are new reports that Google's showing more YouTube videos in Discover, and also that Google's the most cited source in AI Overviews. Isn't that the kind of thing that got them in trouble for promoting their own sites way too often?
Well, let's see. There's this thing. There's a case, I think.
If only there was a large government organization that could crack down on people who do stuff like this.
I do think find it very odd overall that the more they've been found against with these antitrust cases, the more they do things that make them look like they're participating in antitrust.
Yeah, when Yahoo looked at you and said, "Look nonchalant, Google," they meant be cool, not do this.
Yeah, exactly. They're doing all these things that a monopoly would do after being found guilty of being an illegal monopoly. It's kind of weird.
Well, maybe it's like the Spider-Man villain theory. Like, now that you're outed as a villain, just may as well own it and go big, right?
But it's like me. If I get pulled over for speeding, knock on wood, hasn't happened in many years, I go slow after that for a while because I'm afraid of what's going to happen.
You haven't played enough Grand Theft Auto. If you get pulled over for speeding, you weren't trying hard enough.
I have not.
Yeah. Yeah, again, if you get pulled over for speeding, you just weren't trying hard enough. You need to speed up real fast and get away from the cops. You might get 5 stars, but isn't that the goal of everything online these days?
5 stars? Sure.
Yeah. Okay. That's how you know you've been real bad in Grand Theft Auto.
I've never played it.
You got to try it sometime. It is just so much fun. chainsaws and everything. Speaking of people who, I'm sure John Mueller wishes he could play with more chainsaws and lawnmowers, but he's not allowed to because the frustration level will be so high. Remember last week where John Mueller was cautioning against going to Google Trends and using it as your story writing guide?
Yes.
He's now doing the same thing with the People Always Ask feature. Well-known SEO Glenn Gaby asked Mueller, or noted to Mueller, that people always ask should also be looked at, like Google Trends is somewhere you don't go to for content ideas. Mueller agreed by saying definitely that too. I agree with that to a point. I use People Always Ask to figure out what people are thinking about certain products.
Yeah.
what else is there for?
And the devil in the details again with John, right? So the same thing he was saying with last week with Trends, and that is that it can be tempting to use these as like templates to write content for the sake of writing content. So John said in Google Trends for Content Ideas Warning at SEO Roundtable. John said, definitely, it can be tempting to add, it can be tempting to create a content liability on your website. Listen, that content liability, that's a new word. List of topics, list of headings, just fill out the words from a copywriter into a content generator, like generative AI. This is not how you add value to the web. Add value to the web, something that they've been saying a lot lately, and it reflects badly on your site. Adding 100 pages with low value content is not a net positive for a website. It's a net negative. It pulls down the good things the site has done. Imagine going to a store and they have 100 obviously cheap, queerly questionable products for sale. How seriously do you take the 10 that look okay? Sure, sometimes it works for a bit. People can be trusting and it might go with low effort work for a while, but it's not a build a sustainable business. Yes, because Google is an algorithm. That's what happens.
I keep forgetting that John is talking to legions of people out there who are trying to do some formulaic, paint by numbers sort of SEO.
Yeah, cookie cutter SEO is not a thing these days. It does not work well. It can work a little bit, but
Google search is Google search trending is trying to test placing labels in search results about trending this week or a note that this is a new story. They're using different color formats. This is incremental. It's happening for some people, not happening for others. So it's obviously a test. Google will see if people are interested in clicking on trending stuff. Where else do we have? Bing is testing circle-shaped favicons in search results. I guess taking the little rounded corner square things that we've been using and turning them into circles will attract more eyeballs. What else do we have?
Bing's testing categorizing videos and search tests. They're just putting them in categories at the top of the page in different boxes.
Google Maps search for products nearby is going to present again nearby products and nearby stores in a carousel format. This will very much probably help with local search if you're looking for a specific type of product nearby. I think this is the kind of experiment that they're probably running for future search results, especially when they're AI-generated search results that are way more personalized to the individual user. But if you can get your clients' rich results into these carousels, you're likely to see more clicks. I think that's pretty much it. Is there any other story that we need to cover?
No, especially because my connection is really wobbly right now. I'm at a hotel room in San Diego for Brighton, and apparently the internet's having trouble. So, no, I think we're good. I think we covered everything. So,
okay, well, this has been a long and busy week. And as I said at the beginning of the show, it feels like a transition week. There's some very big changes coming to the way the web operates, the way we operate on the web. And many of the stories this week have just had the tone of monumental change. So keep watching out what's going to be happening. As Christine mentioned earlier in the show, this is a really good time to think about getting a site audit. It's as of next week, there's not a heck of a lot going to be happening on your website that's going to make a huge difference to your bottom line going towards Christmas or New Year. So it's a really good time to look into your website, how it operates, and being prepared to start making changes on it either late in December or early in January. In the meantime, friends, we're going to be back next week, around the same time, definitely on the same podcast networks. Be kind to each other, rank well, be good, and on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedrickage, Always Media. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.